Oh, good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yahshua, our Messiah. You're listening to Cross the Border. Today we're continuing in the book of Job, going through the Bible chapter by chapter and verse by verse. Job is a very interesting book. It's a book that, it's made to minister to us all, because we all have pain and suffering and trials and tribulation in this life. And of course, we have Job as the chronicle of a man, a righteous man, a man who feared God and hated evil, and a man who was tested and tried and suffered to the limit of man. Hopefully, none of us have to suffer that type of limit of suffering in our lives, though we all at least get a measure of it. And when you're in it, it's the only thing that seems to matter at the point. But there is a higher cause. There's a higher cause for our suffering, and we should be looking at the result of that suffering to be perfected through it, because we've learned through the Gospels that even our Master, even Jesus, Yahshua, the Messiah, was perfected or matured through suffering. And that's what our lives are about, those of us that are seated in heavenly places in Messiah. Our lives are about the process of being perfected continually until He comes. We left off last time at Job. He told them they were no comfort at all. I can't find that point in his last speech in chapter 14, but he ended up, "His flesh, speaking of man, upon him shall have pain, and his soul within him shall mourn." So we all have our time of pain and our time of mourning. That's the point. And we're going to move on here to chapter 15. Where then answered Eliphaz the Temanite and said, one of Job's friends who came and sat with him 7 days and nights. And finally they begin to have this concourse. They go back and forth. Now Eliphaz answers him, "Should a wise man utter vain knowledge and fill his belly with the east wind? Should he reason with unprofitable talk?" Now this is an answer back to Job, and this is not a very pleasant answer that he's giving him. At least he does call him wise. He says, "Should a wise man utter vain knowledge?" He accuses him of uttering vain knowledge and filling his belly with the east wind. "Should he reason with unprofitable talk, or with speeches wherewith he can do no good?" Yes, our friend Eliphaz should look in the mirror at this point. "Yea, though he casteth off fear and restraineth prayer before God, for thy mouth uttereth thine iniquity, and thou choosest the tongue of the crafty." So he just basically is now bringing accusations against Job, telling him that his own mouth uttereth his iniquity, and he chooses the tongue of the crafty. Boy, you know, with friends like this, who needs enemies, right? Yes, no wonder Job asked them to go away, that told him they were no comfort to him. But they persist, they answer him, and answer him roughly this way, "Thine own mouth condemneth thee, and not I. Yea, thine own lips testify against thee. Art thou the first man that was born, or wast thou made before the hills? Hast thou heard the secret of God, and dost thou restrain wisdom to thyself? What knowest thou that we know not? What understandest thou which is not in us, with us or both, the gray-headed and the very aged men, much elder than thy father? Are the consolations of God small with thee? Is there any secret thing with thee? Why doth thine heart carry thee away, and what do thy eyes wink at, that thou turnest thy spirit against God, and lettest such words go out of thy mouth. What is man, that he should be clean, and he which is born of a woman, that he should be righteous? You know, and here's what Job understands, is that Job loves the law of God, and he keeps the law of God because he loves God, and all of his sins and trespasses are forgiven. And he stands and he speaks in that liberty, which obviously his friends do not understand. How can a man be righteous? How can a man be clean? Well, before Messiah, it was by looking forward to Messiah. Now, after Messiah, where we are now, we look back at what he did for us. His righteousness is imputed to us no less than it was imputed to Job. That's right. And that's what Job understands, and his friends don't seem to understand, because he proclaims that he stands righteous before the Almighty. And these guys are going, no, no way, no one. Uh-uh. See, they don't understand faith, because my righteousness is by faith. And I would have to say that Job's righteousness is by faith. And that's what he's declaring, you know, even in the middle of his trials and tribulation. Are the consolations of God small with thee? Is there any secret thing with thee? Why doth thine heart carry thee away? And what do thine eyes wink at, that thou turnest thy spirit against God, and lettest such words go out of thy mouth? What man, what is man, that he should be clean, and he which is born of a woman, that he should be righteous? You know, that's could almost be a slander against the Messiah. The Messiah was born of a woman, but he wasn't born of the seed of the man. Just a thought. Behold, he putteth no trust in his saints. He putteth no trust in his saints. Now, yea, the heavens are not clean in his sight. I guess he's saying God when he says, behold, he. I get no antecedent there, so kind of threw me. Who is the he? But he's referring to the Almighty. Behold, he putteth no trust in his saints. Yea, the heavens are not clean in his sight. Now, who presumes to speak for the Almighty here? Well, Eliphaz does. He's the one who's treading on dangerous territory now. I mean, the only way I speak for the Almighty is by reading his word. I couldn't say who he puts trust in or who he doesn't trust in. I could only quote his word when I'm speaking about him. The heavens are not clean in his sight. Now, Paul said there is no thing that is evil in itself. That seems like everything you read in the Bible isn't true. You have to consider who is saying it. And right now, this guy Eliphaz, he's saying a lot of truth, but I don't believe that everything he's saying is true. A lot of people point to some of the things that these men, so-called friends of Job, answered him with rough answers, and they think that because it's in the Word of God that it's true, but not always. You have to consider who's saying it, and you have to weigh it against, well, the Word of God, the statements of that he makes about himself and about the heavens and about his creation. And right here, this doesn't measure up. He says, yea, the heavens are not clean in his sight, but Paul said that nothing is evil in itself. So that would make the heavens clean in his sight. It's his creation. No thing. See? So evil is outside the creation. Now we have evil acts, but the evil is in the heart of men. It is not in the created thing. It's just displayed, brought forth, revealed in the created thing. So what Paul said is true, that no thing, no created thing is evil in itself. He continues, Eliphaz here continues with his rough answer to Job. How much more abominable and filthy is man, which drinketh iniquity like water? I will show thee, hear me, and that which I have seen I will declare. First he condemns himself as being a man, and says, yeah, I'm going to show you, Job, which wise men have told from their fathers and have not hid it. And I will declare which wise men have told from their fathers and have not hid, unto whom alone the earth was given, and no stranger passed among them. The wicked man travaileth in pain all his days, and the number of years is hidden to the oppressor. A dreadful sound is in his ears. In prosperity, the destroyer shall come upon him. He believeth not that he shall return out of the darkness, and he is waited for of the sword. He wandereth abroad for bread, saying, Where is it? He knoweth that the day of darkness is ready at hand. Trouble and anguish shall make him afraid. They shall prevail against him as a king ready to the battle. For he stretcheth out his hand against God and strengtheneth himself against the Almighty. He runneth upon him, even on his neck, upon the thick bosses of his bucklers, because he covereth his face with his fatness and maketh collops of fat on his flanks. What is a collop of fat? Plump. It means he's obese. That means you're fat. And make a collops of fat. That's where you get it. And he dwelleth in desolate cities and in houses which no man inhabiteth, which are ready to become heaps. Yes, talk about words, filling his belly with the east wind. Well, I think Eliphaz, the friend of Job, is the so-called friend of Job, I'm going to say, is now letting the east wind out of his belly, because he's just kind of rambling on to what end, I don't know. And certainly, Job is already weary of it, which he has let him know. Chapter 15, verse 29. He shall not be rich, neither shall his sustenance continue, neither shall he prolong the perfection thereof upon the earth. He shall not depart out of darkness. The flame shall dry up his branches, and by the breath of his mouth shall he go away. Let not him that is deceived trust in vanity, for vanity shall be his recompense. Well, I mean, what else do those that are deceived trust in but vanity? It shall be accomplished before his time, and his branch shall not be green. He shall make off his unripe grape as the vine, and shall cast off his flower as the olive. For the congregation of hypocrites shall be desolate, and fire shall consume the tabernacles of bribery. They conceive mischief and bring forth vanity, and their belly prepareth deceit. Now, what's Eliphaz saying to Job here? Is he accusing him of all these things? Apparently he is. He's trying to uproot the secret or hidden sin of Job, that he might come up with some kind of answer for Job's calamity in the flesh, believing that every time anyone suffers any pain or trial or tribulation in their life, that they brought it upon themselves because of their own sin. Though perhaps that is true much of the time, it is not always true. We'll continue here in the next chapter, chapter 16. So Job answers him and says, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. You think of it. Here you are. You're in pain and misery. You've been probably fasting or eating very little, because there's not even any pleasure in eating, if you know how it is when you have to force yourself to eat. There's little pleasure in it. And he's in such pain that the only comfort he has is scraping the boils and sores on his flesh with broken pottery. Okay? And his friends come to him trying to unearth an accusation, trying to get him to confess some sin. So they just, the entire liturgy of sins there, bringing accusations against him, perhaps he will confess to something, but he stands on his righteousness, and they call him a liar and a deceiver. So he says, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. Shall vain words have an end? Or what emboldeth thee that thou answerest? I also could speak as you do, if your soul were in my soul's stead. I could heap up words against you and shake mine head at you, but I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the moving of my lips should assuage your grief. Though I speak, my grief is not assuaged. Though I forbear, what am I eased? But now he hath made me weary. Thou hast made desolate all my company, and thou hast filled me with wrinkles, which is a witness against me, and my leanness rising up in me beareth witness to my face. He teareth me up. He teareth me in his wrath, who hateth me. He gnasheth upon me with his teeth. Mine enemy sharpeneth his eyes upon me. They have gaped upon me with their mouth. They have smitten me upon the cheek reproachfully. They have gathered themselves together against me. God hath delivered me to the ungodly and turned me over to the hands of the wicked. I was at ease, but he hath broken me asunder. He hath also taken me by the neck and shaken me to pieces and set me up for his mark. His archers compass round about. He cleaveth my reins asunder and doth not spare. He poureth out my gall upon the ground. He breaketh me with breach upon breach and runneth upon me like a giant. I have sewed sackcloth upon my skin and defiled my horn in the dust. My face is foul with weeping, and my eyelids is the shadow of death, not for any injustice in mine hands. Also my prayer is pure. O earth, cover not thou my blood, and let my cry, O earth, cover not thou my blood, and let my cry have no place. Also now behold my witness, it is in heaven, and my record is on high. My friends scorn me, but my eye poureth out tears unto God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with God, as a man pleadeth for his neighbor. When a few years are come, then I shall go the way whence I shall not return. Job chapter 17. Job continues, my breath is corrupt, my days are extinct, the graves are ready for me. Are not the mockers with me? And doth not my eye continue in their provocation? Lay down now, put me in a surety with thee. Who is he that will strike hands with me? For thou hast hid their heart from understanding. Therefore shalt thou not exalt them. He that speaketh flattery to his friends, even the eyes of his children shall fail. He hath made me also a byword of the people, and aforetime I was a tabret. Mine eye also is dim by reason of sorrow, and all my members are as a shadow. Upright men shall be astonished at this, and the innocent shall stir up himself against the hypocrite. The righteous also shall hold on his way, and he that hath clean hands shall be stronger and stronger. But as for you all, do you return and come now? For I cannot find one wise man among you. My days are past, my purposes are broken off, even the thoughts of my heart. They change the night into day. The light is short because of darkness. If I wait, the grave is mine house. I have made my bed in the darkness. I have said to corruption, thou art my father. To the worm, thou art my mother and my sister. And where now, where is now my hope? As for my hope, who shall see it? They shall go down to the bars of the pit, when our rest together is in the dust. Chapter 18 of Job. Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, how long? Isn't this what you want to hear? When you've accepted your death, when your flesh is at its end, are these the comforting words you want to hear from your friend Bildad the Shuhite? He says, how long will it be ere you make an end of words? How long before you shut up, Job? This is old English for how long will it be before you shut up, Job? How long will it be ere you make an end of words? Mark, and afterwards we will speak. Okay, tell us when you're done talking, Job. Then we will speak. You're listening to Cross the Border. We're going through the book of Job. We'll be back after these messages.